Mr. Newman, Reel 3. First, I just want to establish, you're not quite sure, but what was the name of the
I can't
the unit?
Remember the number. I think it was 52nd Training Regiment, IC.
Right, we'll check that later. Yeah. Now, we were talking about, generally, the training. What about things like preparing your boots and getting your kit ready for inspection? I mean, how
that
did you
did in the evenings, in your spare time. That one done in any in the army's time. That was done in your time. You were told how to do it, and we were told what they expected. And once again, we, as I said, we were very, very lucky with our particular sergeant, who once again showed us the easy ways of doing it. And there were easier ways.
What were they? I mean, can you remember some of them?
Boots. They used to say, you know, I don't know if you, the army boots were rough leather. They were grained, and the toe caps had to be absolutely shiny. And so you boned them to make them smooth.
What did you use?
Well, most people use bones or shoehorns or something like that to rub them down. Our much nicer sergeant showed us a quick way of doing it with a heavy hammer or an iron to smooth them all out, so we didn't have to spend so much time doing it, but still got the same effect. He showed us the shortcuts, and we had to polish our brass. It's the only time I ever had brass to polish, because as soon as I left there, we didn't have brass anymore. We had ordinary, you know, buttons.
Did you mind? Or did, as I say, the sergeant. What was his name, by the way?
Lewis, I think. He'd been in forever. He went as a boy soldier. I think he'd done about 20 years.
What about the other instructors? What were they like? I mean, he wouldn't be. Or was he? Did he go with you for everything?
No, he was just. He was just our drill sergeant. And we'll look who's looked after us generally. The gunnery bloke was good. Once again, I don't remember his name, but he was a fairly young man, sergeant, a wartime soldier, showed a bent for gunnery, and became a gunnery instructor. Nice bloke, very efficient, and very easy to understand. The driving instructors, once again, were very good. They'd had a lot of practice, so they knew exactly what they wanted, and they were doing it in a set pattern. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they just followed that pattern. For 99% of us, it worked. For the odd one, they were going to learn to drive. Simple as that. Radio blokes, they lost me. They were just...
Was that their fault or yours?
I think... No, that's not fair. One, I wasn't interested. Really, I wasn't interested in radio. Secondly, it was their job to get results as quickly as possible. And it's far too technical for me at that time. Just radio? No, wasn't for me.
What about officers? Did you see much of your officers, or were you even aware of them?
Oh, we're aware of them. You saluted everybody at a tie on. But they were no problem, you know, not in the way that they could have been. They were no problem at all. They knew. Once again, they were there to get people trained and ate and through their training as quickly as possible. They didn't want to have to come bring people back and repeat training. So although they were officers, they were in charge of us. They were not there to worry us. It's their job to get us through our training as quickly as possible and as well as possible. So fair enough, you know. So no problem.
Were you allowed out in the town at all?
After the first fortnight, when we were satisfied we wouldn't be a disgrace to the army, we were allowed to go out into the town. we were not allowed to go home, which I thought was a pity because we only lived in Eastleigh, which was only an hour's train ride away. So I used to get a train pass for every Saturday night, which meant I had to be back for Saturday night. Catch a train, I'll be home for Saturday afternoon. This is the third and fourth weeks. Catch a train back on the Sunday with the same pass and hope nobody missed me. Went fine the first week. Second week I got back to Warminster Station and the station was stiff with red caps, with military police. And I thought, oh my God, I've had it. So I got off the train and stood on the edge of a platform looking at all these red caps and said to a girl standing at the window, do you mind kissing me goodbye and waving to me as you go? And she looked at the red cap and said, yeah, that's all right. So I stood talking to her for a few minutes and the train went out and we went. And I walked to the booking office and the red cap said, yeah, it's a bugger, seeing them off, isn't it, mate? And I went back to the camp. I didn't think I'd better risk it the next week.
When you did go into Warminster, I mean, what would you do?
Not much to do. There's only the pubs and the cinema. Apart from anything else, we didn't have the money to go drinking. Because I was only on a shilling a day. So we want the money. And I made an allowance. 3 and 6 a week, so I only had 3 and 10 a week.
How did you get on with the local civilians?
It's a military town. It always was a military town. They used to have the soldiers there. No problem in those days. I believe after the war there was a bit of a problem, but not in those days. No problem whatever.
So they were friendly?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, we couldn't go out much. We couldn't afford it.
Now, what happens when you finish your 6 weeks?
I had a week's leave. And at the end of the 6 weeks, I went back to Warminster. And they said, don't unpack, you're going to Warminster tonight, to Bovington tonight, for your trade training. I said, Bovington? And we said, Bovington? I said, yeah, we're cutting your training short. So we went to Bovington, where we were shoved onto tanks straight away.
Now, trade training as what? What had they picked for you?
They hadn't done yet. We were going to decide when you got there.
So that, the, you know, the...
Yeah. So we went there and they started just driving tanks.
Now, what was the unit called at Bovington? I mean, did that have a number?
No, that, I don't know. That, there was, in Bovington itself, it was the headquarters of the RAC.
It's a depot.
The depot. And there's several different units there. We just went to Bobby. Don't know what we were in there.
And what was your accommodation like there?
Same as in the other place, proper barracks.
And could you take us through your training there then? I mean, how did they set you up and which trade did they put you onto?
Well, the first thing I did was teach us to drive tanks. Churchill's. Remember, we just had a week's leave at the end of our 6 weeks basic training, which meant we were at the end of March. This was May, the beginning of June. We went there and they said, first of all, we're going to teach you to drive tanks. And they started showing us around on tanks and sitting on the seats and starting them.
What was your first impression being in a real tank? That was the, what tank was it?
That was a Churchill, oddly enough.
And what was it like the first time in it with the engine on?
Noisy. Well, apart from that, nothing really. You know, you had been prepared for it.
In what way?
You'd been told what it was like, and you'd seen a tank. And you'd actually been in one, because when they were talking about throwing grenades, which was part of the gunnery bit, you were told you mustn't let go before you get hit the tank. Because if you hit you, it's going to drop in the, you know, that sort of thing. So you knew roughly what you were letting yourself in for. Anyway, they said, you're going to start driving tanks. And then we'll decide whether what you're going to do. The idea was that they spend a week of some time on driving again, just like some time on gunnery, some time on rest, and then they decide what you're going to do. And I was hoping I would be a tank gunner. Anyway, we had 3 weeks driving.
So tell me about how did they train you to drive a Churchill tank? Actually, if you could just give it a sketch out, if you can, of what it was, the layout of a Churchill inside.
Can't really remember much about it.
That's fair enough.
In a driving seat, it was stick steering. But a Churchill had episodic gearing. So with an ordinary tank, when you pull back on the lever, you steered by using brakes. You braked on one side and drove around.
You mean it turned the tank to that?
Because it braked one side, so the other side went forward. But that's why it wasn't moving, so you turned around. But with a Churchill, you didn't. We had what we called episodic gearing, which meant you turned one way, you slowed up one bit of gearing and speeded up another bit, so that both of them were moving, it wasn't braking. But it had one big disadvantage. When you were in neutral, with the engine running, you could spin it around like a top. And one or two people got killed, didn't that? They didn't realise that somebody's outside and they just turn it around. Because no other tank did it. I don't know why we went on Churchills before we went on anything else. I imagine that we were going on to go on to a lot of tanks. I don't know. They showed us the Valentine, they showed us the Matilda, and they showed us the Crusader.
How were these different tanks rated? I mean, which were regarded as good and which were regarded as bad amongst the tank corps at the time?
We thought.
Or did you think they were all good?
We thought they were all crap.
Did you think they were crap before you went into action with them, though?
Yeah. Well, as soon as we saw these little two painted guns, we thought, my God, But even so, I still wanted a tank gunner. They were basically classed into three different types. You had the heavy battle tanks, like the Churchill. You had the cruiser tanks, which were basically the same. Sort of classification as the Navy. And the fast little whippets, little skater things, And the Churchill was their battle tank. More heavily armoured, but slower.
So anything else to drive? I mean, you've got these gears that, and the steering. Is there anything else to drive in a tank?
Well, you have the clutch and just like an ordinary car, you have that brake and accelerator. But the steering was so different, and your visibility was limited.
To what?
Well, it depended on where you were. If you could drive with your head outside, all right, it's easy. But if you're stuck inside just looking through the visor, you're very limited. And as I said, I imagine they thought they were going to have time to teach us a lot of different things.
So you'd learn not just the Churchill, but the others?
That was to be the idea, I think. But after 3 weeks, they said, oh, by the way, you're going on embarkation leave tomorrow. And so I went on week's embarkation leave.
So your trade test training had just turned into, that was it?
That was it.
One tank?
Yeah.
And you never did the gunnery or the signalling?
No, I was on the next thing I knew, I was on a boat.
So how...
You only did about 11 weeks when I went overseas.
So it was still June?
No, June, July, by the time I had to leave. I went on vacation leave and went back to Bobbington.
So that's all you... did you get any other training on the Churchill at all?
No.
Had you had much time to drive it? On rough ground?
Three or four hours. I turned one over in the middle of beer.
How'd you do that?
Went up on the ground. I was due for inquiry, but I went overseas instead.
How was it easy to turn over? I mean, what mistake had you made?
I went up on the bank too high. Yeah.
The sideways tilt?
Yeah.
How far could you go then? I mean, what?
I imagine, I don't really know, I should think about 30 degrees. No, I went more than 30.
And just tipped over?
Yeah. That's sheer lack of experience. I just didn't know.
Was there no one with you in the tank to warn you, tell you to...
Yeah. The first thing I knew was, hey, you silly...
And that was too late.
Too late.
So, any training on maintenance of churches or anything? So 3 hours driving, that was it. That was it.
And I sailed for the Middle East in September.
Were you worried about this? Lack of training?
It didn't make any difference, did it? Whether you were worried or not, you didn't have any choice.
Was there any explanation of why your training had been cut short?
There's no, there's no reason why they should explain to us. I was a trooper. I was a private soldier. If I didn't tell private soldiers reasons for anything, you'd do it. Thinking about it afterwards, I mean, we didn't know. Obviously, we didn't know what's happening. But thinking about it afterwards, I imagine I was trying to get everybody out of the Middle East in time for Alamein.
But you hadn't qualified as a tank driver.
No.
So you hadn't taken... You hadn't taken your trade test, and you weren't a tank driver.
No. Right. But I went out there with the idea that I would be a driver in that course, or the second driver sort of thing. You know, the bloke who sat in the front beside the driver with the old machine gun.
Now, so you were going to work on Churchill's?
No.
You didn't know?
Didn't know. We got it in the Middle East, and there weren't any Churchill's in the Middle East.
Had they shown you the other jobs in a tank at that stage? I mean, you
know, say only what we told us at Warminster. Only what we told us at Warminster. I didn't have a clue.
So you didn't know what the other members of the Churchill crew did?
Well, I knew there was a gunner there, and I knew there was a tank commander, who was either a sergeant or an officer. I knew there was a driver. I knew there was a bloke sitting beside the co-driver.
What else did the co-driver do?
Hold machine gun. He had a holding machine gun. And there was a radio operator, and in the turret there was a radio operator, the tank commander, and the gunner.
The main gunner?
Yeah.
The 2-pound gun.
Yeah.
But you not had any experience, you know, that all this business of being trained in all these jobs.
It just hadn't worked. No. I mean, it wasn't just me. It wasn't just me.
It was the whole draft.
Yeah.
Now, you went on embarkation leave. How did your family react to the fact you were going out so quickly?
You'll be able to ask her in a few minutes. She'll be back. They were a bit surprised.
You were married at the time, weren't you?
No, I wasn't married then. I was engaged. Yeah, I was engaged then. But they were a bit shocked as well. We went to the Preddy's Club, because we both worked at Preddy's, and suddenly said, you're only home a fortnight ago. You're bloody lucky. My Charlie, or whatever his name was, hadn't been home for 3 months. So then I'd have told him why I was home. And he said, but you've only been in the army 7 weeks.
So what about, where did you went out in September. Where did you go from? Which ship?
The Athlone Castle.
Athlone Castle.
And we sailed from Liverpool.
And what were conditions like on the Athlone Castle?
I hate to say this. We were all giving boarding passes when we got on it, which gave us our deck number, our bunk number, and the room number, sort of row number. And I was A11, which meant I was on the bottom floor, right at the front, on the top bunk of three. And there's no... if you could put your head up against the side, which, because you're a bit of a wind like that, and bits are still there, you could hear the water going past.
And what were conditions like down there?
I don't know, I didn't stay there very long. They started asking for a few volunteers to work in the galley. So I looked at this front bit and said, I will. Never volunteer again, you see. And for the rest of the time I was on, we worked in the galley.
And you moved the accommodation up?
No, I slept in the galley, but the accommodation was still there.
But you never went there?
I go down there once a day, as much as I could nick from the galley for the mates.
What was working like in the galley?
Right.
What did you do?
Peel but cooked, helped, you know, cooked, they wouldn't let me cook the meat, but I was veg cook. They let me cook veggies and things like that, and I ate well. And the other five fellas in the six, they fed well as well.
And what about seasickness? Any problem? Seasickness.
God, yeah. I don't know what happened. I don't really know what happened. I imagine that the idea was that we were going to get out to the Middle East as soon as possible. But I gather from things I overheard that there became a U-boat scare. Instead of going out as quickly as possible, we went straight across the North Atlantic, just south of Greenland, and went down the United States coast. And running just south of Greenland, we ran into a gale. And for 2 days, I was as sick as a dog. And I was never seasick again.
Were most people seasick then?
Everybody was. That's what I was glad I wasn't down there.
What was it like down there?
Floating. People were sick. Oh, it was horrible. But as I said, we were all right. Me and the other five in there. We were all right. I didn't drink in those days. But as a member of a crew working in the galley, I was laid in the crew's clubs. And my five mates had their crew's food and their crew's drink.
How did you wangle that out of them? I mean, were they allowed in the club with you, or...?
No, they weren't laid in, but I could take it down to them. I wasn't supposed to, but...
What, a bottle, or...?
Yeah. And the food, of course, I'd get that down to them. Yeah. So the six of us did all right. I mean, and the other people who volunteered. There's about 2 dozen of us, you know.
And you say this route, you went right out,
yeah,
and then down.
Down the coast of the United States. We went into the town that was then called Bahia in Brazil. I believe it was then called São Paulo, I think. And we stayed there for a few days. We did a presentation march through the town. You never seen anything so funny in your life.
Why?
Well, we were a cruise ship. Well, I was in tanks. We marched normally, I think, semi-normally. We had infantry. We had light infantry. We had guards. And there was the light infantry doing their 160 or whatever it is was a minute. Us doing our 110. The guards doing their 119 or whatever it is they do. And we're all in a certain... And everything is funny, you know. Anyway, the Brazilians seemed to like it. I believe we were the first British troops to go there. And so we were welcomed with everybody waving flags and God knows what. In those days, in 1942, it was just like a old western town. You know, track roads with the saloons up the side with the butterfly door, you know, the bat wing doors. And the verandas outside. It's just like a Wild West were, the streets were. We stayed there for, I think, about a week. And then we sailed across the South Atlantic to Durban. Got off at Durban and stayed there for 6 weeks. By then, I don't know because nobody's ever told me. I imagine the idea we were going to get out there quickly. But because of this U-boat scare, we didn't. And by the time we got to Durban, Alamein was all over. And so there wasn't any need for us anymore. It'd be in a hurry.
So what happened at Durban? I mean, what did you do at 6 weeks?
Sat in a camp.
Was that retreat camp?
Don't know. Just sat there, did nothing. Went into Durban every day. Marvellous time.
What sort of reception did they give you this time?
Marvellous again. Absolutely fantastic. Really was. They didn't like the Australians, because the Australians had a fight there the week before. But us, they thought we were marvellous. But we did absolutely nothing. We just sat in the camp. And then we got on a French trooper called Felix Roussel. Two square funnels and a permanent list of port at 10 degrees.
Felix what, sorry?
Roussel. I don't know who Felix Roussel was, but he was... He was a French trooper in any case. I think it was 200 French troops, a 1,000 native troops, or 3,000 British troops. And regarding that, I went up the coast. I went to Kenya for a few weeks, very lovely again, but once again did nothing. Then went up to Port Tewfik and caught the train up to Cairo. And went to a rest camp called, to a camp there, a staging camp called Sidi Bish. And sat in the bun there for a fortnight.
Then what?
Then I was sent to a regiment called the Yorkshire Hussars.
The Yorkshire Hussars?
Yeah.
And did they have a number or any? Or
no, just Yorkshire Hussars.
Were they yeomanry?
They were a yeomanry. Alexandra, Princess of Wales, own Yorkshire Hussars.
And where and when did you join them? Do you know the date?
Sidi Bish, and it was in January 93.
And what was your reception when you joined them?
They wondered what the hell we were doing there. Because they didn't want us.
Were they aware you weren't trained?
Oh, yes. And that's where we started training. That's where we started doing our training. There's about 8 of us, of the people who left, who got there. 8 or 10. No, a bit more than that. A couple of dozen of us. And there we started doing our training. Only then it was on Crusaders.
That's what they had.
They had Crusaders.
So what were the Crusaders like?
There was a cruiser tank that was faster, still a 2-pounder, although some of them had 6-pounders by then. It was faster. The steering was by brake, not by gearing. You know, you brake something. And it was... But once again, it was... I'm not sure, I can't remember. No, it was a 3-man turret. It was a set of 5-man crew. And then we start, as I said, we started doing our trade training. And they had a vacancy for an electrician.
Was the trade training any different from what you'd been doing before, a different town? But
yes, because it was with a regiment rather than a training unit.
So
we were being taught by tank crews rather than by instructors.
And what difference did that? I mean, how was it different? Different people, but
well, they were. I don't really know because I'm only surmising here. But they were approaching it from a different angle. They were teaching me or somebody else, some other learner, to drive their tank, and they didn't want me messing it up. So they were far more careful about the way they taught us. And I've been doing that for... We were doing our training. And then there became a vacancy for an electrician. And because I had my ONC in electrical engineering, which I got at Cuddy's, I went to see the squadron commander, who said, yes, just the man we're looking for. And sent me away on 6 weeks trade training. And I became a vehicle electrician.
Now, where did you go for your trade testing?
Cairo. Some workshop, I don't know where you.
And what training do you get as a vehicle electrician?
It's basic, but there's only a number of things which can go wrong with electrics in a tank, or in any vehicle come to that.
What are they?
Well, you've got the ignition. And as you go through the ignition, there's a set pattern. You've got to plug at one end, and if you've got a spark there, there's nothing wrong with the ignition. If there's a spark there, it could be the plug that's wrong, it could be the lead that's wrong, it could be the distributor that's wrong, or something within the distributor, or something in the coil which is wrong. And it's just a question of working your way back till you find where it stops working. So if it works at the distributor and it doesn't work at the plug, there must be something wrong in the lead. basically logic. Similarly with everything else in electrical, you find your way through. You're a total sequence of fault finding. You find out where the fault is, and then you cure the fault.